I'm going to try saying hello to see if it's working. Can everybody hear?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for coming. I thought, geez, it's the last Sunday in August. I keep thinking it's July and August is still coming. It doesn't seem quite possible that it's that far into the year, but it's so good to see you. Most of you know, I think, that I'm living 3 weeks out of the month or three quarters time at the Hokyoji Zen Practice Community in almost Iowa. It's actually in a town called Itzen, Z-E-N, in Minnesota, which is... The monastery itself is not accessible until you go into Iowa. So it's especially happy and delighting for me to see all your familiar faces. You are with me. You are with me no matter where I am. I would not possibly be the person I am without you, and I do not believe I could be nearly as happy as I am. I have a different life after becoming a Buddhist. So for all of you that didn't even know that you were supporting me all this time, I thank you. And I thank our teachers. I particularly want to thank our head teacher, who has bravely taken on the task of being the head teacher. And I'd have to say, I think we could all agree that she's an awesome head teacher. And really, really has just been growing and growing and leading us in ways that are beneficial for us and all beings. So what I want to talk about today, the title of my talk is, Trying to Become a Buddha is Easy. So this is a poem by a Buddhist hermit, now dead, named Shiwu. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. It's S-H-I-W-U. And this is a translation of a whole series of poems of this Buddhist who practiced mostly as a monastic. Trying to become a Buddha is easy, but ending delusions is hard. How many moonlit nights have I sat and felt the cold before dawn? Trying to become a Buddha is easy, but ending delusions is hard. How many moonlit nights have I sat and felt the cold before dawn? This is up for me, I find, actually regularly as I go through my life, there are phrases or pictures or teachings or physical experiences that stick. It's sort of like I'm a kind of Velcro, a Buddhist Velcro, and something will come at me and it stays with me. So I usually use those things in constructing my talks. And this one came up for me because I was just recently at Hokyoji at the Jewel Mirror Sesshin there, which is a week-long sesshin with three teachers, including our head teacher, Dokai Jordson, but also Daigaku Rume, who is a teacher in St. Louis. He spent 27 years in a Japanese monastery with a highly revered and still living but no longer talking teacher, Harada Seki Roshi. And the third teacher was Rayren Gumbel, who is now the resident teacher at the Milwaukee Zen Center. And the three of them offered us really thought-provoking and heart-grabbing teachings, one of which came from Daigaku, who sat down and said, "It's not enough to just find the path of non-suffering." He said, "We have to see the source," is what he called it, which is, maybe put another way, we have to realize nirvana, the third noble truth. That's our duty. That's our responsibility, according to Buddha's teaching. And that got me thinking about my own practice, about the practice and the sanghas with whom I'm familiar. Ken, you're looking like I might not be speaking loudly enough.
Pretty good. Thank you.
Okay. And that's always a challenging question. When I read The Life of Buddha, I was touched by a conversation where he was speaking to his most senior and closest disciples. And they were worrying about how old he was getting and what they would do when he was no longer around, and how, as they got more practitioners, the practice seemed to be, if not degenerating, I think the way one of them put it was, the more practitioners we get, the more rules we make. That touches me, and what he said to them was, "So it is. So it is. This is the nature of impermanence." But he also said, "There will come a time when no one will know anything about Buddhism and the Buddhist teachings." And that makes me cry. It makes me cry. Even though I'm absolutely confident that's true. He said, "I didn't discover this. I just kind of found it again because of such a deep vow to wake up, to find a way of non-suffering." So I think, in a way, what's easy for us is delusion, and that's why trying to become a Buddha is easy. Because trying, this is, you know, my take on this, so you might have another one, but trying is, I think her name is Aya Kema. I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly. She says to her nuns, although she might be dead now, "This is not a matter of can do. This is a matter of doing or not doing." And the Buddha is very clear about that in his teachings. So this trying is, of course, something that we do in order to realize the Four Noble Truths, to find the way of non-suffering. But oftentimes, at least in my experience, both with myself and some of my students, is a kind of holding back. When we think of the phrases like a can-do person, right? That's somebody that basically says, "Okay, I don't know how, but I'm going to do it." And that's a different energy than saying, "Well, I'll do my best, you know, or I'll give it a try." And a lot of times I hedge on my vow. It's like, "Well, today, you know, there's all these things getting in the way." Or just, you know, "I'm getting old. This is getting harder." And not like that isn't true, it's just not the point. It's just not the point. So this poem is, as I'm sure you can see, perfect. Trying to become a Buddha is easy, right? Because then I just have to have, in a way, I think of this as kind of living in my dreams. I can kind of dream of becoming a Buddha without actually having to put out the horsepower and the effort to become a Buddha. And I think that's just a very human thing. There's nothing wrong with dreaming. It's just recognizing that that's not sufficient for the task of freeing all beings from suffering. And this wonderful phrase, but ending delusions is hard. Well, that's kind of the crux of the matter, isn't it? We are very deeply, deeply attached. The longer I practice, the more clearly I see how subtle and many layered my attachments are and how just karmically they've got a lot of energy. They're not in short supply, my delusions. And probably the biggest delusion, the fundamental delusion is that if I just do enough and try enough, I can get satisfaction. And that whole, it's a little bit like white supremacy. It's sort of in everything, but we rarely see it in its cold trueness. So just the whole way we approach peace comes out of how do we get peace? How do we eliminate what we don't want? And that's a good place to start, right? If we start there, we'll do some suffering and we'll get more energized about seeking ways of non-suffering. So this is just ways and means. This is total dynamic functioning. But it's very important to be able to see that, to be able to see through that, so that we have a chance to do more than cope, which is a fine skill to have, and we wouldn't be here if we didn't do it very well. But what we need is training, this training in giving up delusions and cultivating different patterns. So a couple of things about this I wanted to share. Daigaku put out on the table, it's not enough to find a way of non-suffering. Reiren told a story about really catching fire, really having her hair on fire to practice Buddhism. However, she was in her 40s, she was a single mother, she was working without adequate support from the father, so that was a problem. And she went to her teacher and she said, I know that I have to go do this, I have to, so I'm going to just have to leave my kids. So she worked on that. But then she sat down with her kids and said, I have to do this, so I'm going to leave. And the looks on their faces were simply undeniable. She just couldn't do that. She just couldn't do that. So then she went back to her teacher, and she was really angry. Really angry. And her teacher basically said, well, you're going to have to take care of your kids until they're ready to be launched. And that was 12 years So a lot of us have a lot of commitments and involvements and entanglements. And of course, I guess the end of the story so far is Rayburn's now a teacher, and she did go and study and give herself fully to the practice of Zen, and she's still doing that. But 12 years, that's daunting. That's daunting. So that's part of why that vow has to be so strong. It seems so complicated. But when we're really clear, at least I think most of us have at one point or another had a do or die kind of decision to make at some level. Maybe it wasn't a huge life do or die, but we had to pee or get off the pot. So we know something about the angst of that. We know something about kind of the strength that it takes. As always, when I prepare a talk or am looking for the answer to some quandary, things come out of universal dynamic functioning to help me. And I came in yesterday with some things to do while I was still kind of mulling my talk. And in the lobby, there were two Lion's Roar magazines. And I found out that they were August and September, so pretty current. And so I took a quick look, simply because coming to grips with actually writing down a talk is something that stimulates the desire to escape for me. But I looked in there, and lo and behold, our beloved Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams had a little piece entitled Liberation, It Is All or Nothing. So in a couple of paragraphs, I haven't returned it to the lobby yet, but I highly recommend that you take a look at it. It's a very short and very potent article, especially for anybody who's been really engaged and working in the whole arena of racism and coming together as equals with all people and repairing, purifying the karma of the damage that's been done, that particular kind of separation. Also coming from the standard delusions of, if I just get something, I will be satisfied. All right. I want to read you one thing from something that Daigaku left with us after he went back home. By the way, he left the monastery after 27 years, and he is now married and the resident priest at the St. Louis Zen Center that he is part of. So life takes many forms. So we can kind of let go of some of the worries that we have about, well, I really don't want to be a priest, you know, or, you know, how do I realize nirvana if I'm a lay person? I can't practice in the way that the Buddha talked about, which was often very much tailored for monastics. In any case, Daigaku is fluent in Japanese and was his teacher's translator for many years. And he, along with a gentleman, a person, Keiko Ome, translated a Dogen fascicle, Guidelines for Studying the Way. And as and what he translated was his teacher's commentary on this fascicle, which is a very powerful one. And I wanted to share you with what the commentary said, because it relates to and kind of gives you a feel for the what's required for realization. He starts out in the very beginning, he says, this chapter says the most important thing is to have the desire to realize the way with all your heart. It is no use practicing the way if you don't have this motivation. Without this desire to realize the way, nothing will happen. So, having been practicing for 20 years, I thought, okay, well, good thing to take a look at. What is important here, he goes on, is how you can really feel the need to seek the way, the heart of the matter, which could help you become aware of that need, is that this body is impermanent and you don't know when you might die. You have been born and simply to depart this life without knowing anything about the true self would be really unfortunate. And I get those feelings. You know, it's like I'm getting close to the finish line here. I'm 69 now. So I don't have as much time to fritter away. I'm more ready to believe that I'm impermanent and that I won't live forever. And then the final thing he said is, he said it really took Gautama. He said, we've been studying the self for eons and we still don't know what it is. But he said it was the Buddha who basically really got into it with his questions. What is self? Who am I? How can we really find satisfaction? How is it possible to resolve the problem of birth and death, which seems like a pretty big problem for most of us? How can we stop suffering from these problems? Don't you ask yourself from time to time, like every time you read the news, maybe? He left home and became a monk because of his need to find answers to these questions. So that's a pretty, I mean, he was brought up in a wealthy family. His dad wanted him to be the next ruler in his state, you know, the next governor. And he had everything he wanted. He was in a very rich place, but he really felt that fire. So we're going to be starting preparation for Jikai in September and a practice period in October. So I think it's a really good time to just spend a little bit of examination, self-study, a little time on the cushion, just to know what's my truth about my motivation. How energetic is my intention? Because, as he says, the most important thing is to have the desire to realize the way with all your heart. Can you feel that in your heart? You know, maybe you're just here trying out Buddhism. That's okay, but you need to know. You need to know. It's kind of like, I would be happy with a little less suffering. That's pretty much where I was when I started. And most of us come here because of suffering. You know, it's like it's been too long or it's the same thing or something. We usually don't come to say, well, let me enjoy the spiritual wonderfulness of the Buddhist teaching. That's okay, but we have to know where that is, and we have to understand that, as he says, without the desire to realize the way, a fiery one, a really wholehearted one, nothing will happen. I can't say that I totally buy that, because, you know, I'm not so sure how fiery my heart has been, But any amount of practice will make a difference. Any amount of practice will make a difference. How am I doing on time? I'm getting there.
When 10 a.m.
It's 10 a.m. and I have to be done, or even though we don't have youth practice, I should be done by what, 10 after? Another 10?
10:25.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. It's good to know the requirements, which is what I've been talking about. This is the requirements. So oftentimes when we're talking with teachers or each other, we basically want to know, so what should I do? No matter, you know, we always have a what should we do question. How shall I practice? What should it look like? And as somebody who now a lot of the time takes the teacher's seat, I know from 20 years of practice that it's just this brutally simple answer. Be present with don't know mind continuously and do your best. I mean, that's the essence of everything. Now, the Buddha in the Pali Canon was very detailed. He gave us lots, two treasures are the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which details 37 practices or something like that. And he gave us the Present Moment with Breathing Sutra, which is something that I was teaching at the Clouds and Water Sesshin that was at Hokkyoji. And we've all probably done some amount of meditation. Has anybody here not done any meditation? So we know how relentlessly boring it can be. It's like, it's hard to get excited about it a lot of times. And yet, if we follow the instruction, which includes a recurring phrase, ardent, fully aware, attentive, and this is the one that really hit me this time, having given up longing and discontentment toward the world. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm guessing that some of you, like me, get sort of a, you know, a really high temperature of discontentment while reading the news. There's an immense number of things to be discontented about. So, to give up discontentment. Now, really, we can look at giving up longing and discontentment towards the world and say, oh, this is just the second noble truth. The cause is greed, anger, and ignorance. Stop that. It's not good for you. It will, you know, it causes suffering. But somehow this phrasing, so ardent, fully aware, and attentive is the part about sitting in the, you know, a fire with my intent to really, truly fulfill this prescription that I've been given by Dr. Buddha. But this section is something that I realize I really have to actively be aware of. So what happens when I am folding the 15th set of sheets or making the 12th bed or in the third hour of watering the lawn at Hokkyoji, I've got all of these complaints coming up. And the habit is to just keep that going, right? There's this kind of do loop, you know, and then I'll think of something, it's like, well, maybe I can eat something, or maybe I can read something. You know, I'm essentially looking for relief. You know, I'm looking for aspirin or Alka-Seltzer or something to get rid of my discontent. And so I've been practicing more consciously with saying, oh, discontent, discontent. And then just saying, can you pivot? Can you just let that go? Simply because the experience is quite unpleasant. It's just quite unpleasant. And, you know, I feel all kinds of resistance. A common one that I think some of you probably have is it's like, well, without discontent, how would we ever solve any problems? Or if I let go of my discontent, if I let go of my objections to the many egregious forms of suffering that we seem to be propagating. Not me, of course, I'm not propagating them, but that others are propagating, then it feels sort of like somehow I'm letting go of the ability to do something about them. And I think the Buddha's life is really the thing that I try to call up. It's helpful to read the Buddha's life because it really takes discipline to say, I've given up discontentment toward the world. Now what? Now how am I going to take care of what's happening right now? And that's the only time I can take care of it. And the single best way I can take care of it, because there's not a me or an other, because we are all connected and have never been anything but, because we're all in this soup together, even more so than we were when we just first showed up on the planet. I mean, the way our society runs right now, I don't know that I could feed myself if I didn't have millions of people growing things, harvesting things, packaging them, sending them places so that all I have to do is go to the grocery store. I've never had a hungry day in my life. I've never had that happen. So, relatively speaking, I can give up the attitude, the view that includes I and other and grasping at something or pushing away something, which is the very source of suffering. Am I willing to do that? Because without that, no way is it possible to realize the Buddha way, to free all beings. One thing that Daigaku Rumi said was, because duality arises together, good and bad, because you can't have one without the other, if we got rid of everything that we thought was terrible and succeeded, we would also get rid of everything that is good. It's just the way it works, right? You can't really... There is no such thing as black without white. So if you try to disappear those, and in a sense, look, I won't go there. All right. So how do we practice? We have these two opportunities here in our Sangha, which is to go forward with receiving jikai, or the precepts, which is to essentially ask for and receive the fundamental teaching on how I can be free of suffering and how I can free other beings. So this really involves, as I said, training versus coping. Both valuable things, but training is necessary, which means that I have to concentrate. And what the Buddha recommends, he starts everybody in his Sangha I say that like he's around and I know him and I was there when it happened for me, which in a way is true, right? Because, of course, we're inextricably linked. But he started people out with the present moment with breathing. And that sutra is sort of like a prelude to the four foundations of mindfulness, which essentially is the study of the only thing we've got, which is eyes, ears, nose, mouth, body, and mind. That is literally our whole universe, and it's not separate even when we think it is from everything. But what we have to work with, because it's not like the relative isn't part of everything, which means, yeah, this part where I think there's an I and that I think I'm separate and there's a mine and a yours, that exists too. It's not going anywhere. But if I can spot it, then it's not a problem. Katagiri has a wonderful piece that starts out by saying, we're all selfish. Doesn't it feel kind of relieving to just say that out loud? We're all greedy and selfish. And he said, and it's not something that we really can achieve a level of comfort with. So we can't really escape or avoid it. But then he concludes by saying, but that doesn't mean we can't take care of it. That doesn't mean we can't take care of it. So, right effort is cultivate what's wholesome and takes us in the direction of non-suffering and relinquish this abandoned delusion, right? So relinquish that which causes us suffering. And so I don't know how many conversations I've had with myself and other people, which kind of boils down to there's this, there's this, there's this, there's this. How am I supposed to do this? There's a phrase that comes out of the book Every Day Zen. The answer to that is, thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. That is giving up discontentment towards the world. Thanks for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. So that's cultivating positivity. So right effort on the cultivating the positive, we can practice the 16 phrases. As a matter of fact, Sosan is a teacher on Insight Timer, which some of us are users of, and she has a guided meditation with exactly those 16 phrases. And they're great phrases. They're great phrases. It's sort of like, oh, I can do this. I can do this. And then you sit down and you try to do it and you find out that, as Dokai said, he said, after 44 years of practicing, I'm going for 3 breaths in a row. And that works. So it's these kinds of things. It's like we don't really have to worry, in a sense, where we are. We're always right here in the middle of the fire, and we're always right here, totally not who we think we are, completely in touch at all times with everything that we need. But since we don't see it that way, we have to work at training our minds. And I learned about something from, of all places, a business publication, which is using somebody that has a PhD. I forget what his name is, but I could pull it out. He's got a PhD about a process that's called Noticed Shift Rewire. So, and what I liked about it, because I've been working with it, this is another thing, right? So as soon as I start saying, I really need to practice more wholeheartedly, all of a sudden things come along and pop up that I notice, probably because I'm tuned into what they can do for me. So this one is, you know, just a version of pause, breathe, and, you know, basically stay present and calm down and notice what's going on. But in this case, they've scientifically discovered that we're sort of pre-wired for treating things that are unpleasant, like they were life-threatening in our current life. And that floods the brain with this big blob of negativity. And that the fastest way to deal with it, so that you can recover quickly and do a better job, that was the orientation of the article, but it works either way, right? Because a lot of us have really wonderful jobs, so we need this, right? So the quickest way to recover is to notice it, and then to pivot, to shift to something positive, which in this case, the thing that they've scientifically proved is the best, gratitude. Gratitude, right? So I can sit here and, like this morning when I opened and I said, without you and a whole bunch of people I don't know, or if I did know them, I've forgotten them, or have made it possible for me to be sitting here right now. You know, how many parts of the universe were involved in this podium, you know, whatever. It's very quick. You can do this in 30 seconds. But the other thing you have to squeeze into the 30 seconds is savoring it, savoring the gratitude. So noticed, shift to pivot to a pivot I like better, pivot to gratitude, and then spend some time with it. Because that's what conditions new connections in this brain so that we can be trained in positivity. We can train that trigger that takes us into the depths of despair or tension or whatever. And I'm a person that has all kinds of anxiety karma. And so almost anything can send me into, you know, lots of tension. And I have been working on this and training with this. Early on, thanks to my business, I learned that was a really great way to die of a heart attack. So so that's one thing that we can do. We're at 10:18, I better get going, okay? And then releasing the negative. So this is this thing about giving up discontentment. I was at Plum Village once, which is Thich Nhat Hanh's, plantation of spiritual Buddhists, but a bunch of monks and nuns in France. And it was one of the days when everybody got together, so that meant like 700 people. And the snack stand was open, and there was one bag of potato chips left, and I got it. And I was so happy, and I just, you know, I sort of like raised it above my head, and I said, last bag of potato chips. And this woman who I respected and really liked, who is one of the lay teachers within the Thich Nhat Hanh Sangha, kind of looked at me, and it was sort of like, you know, like maybe you could share that, you know, last bag. And I was, and I just wasn't on that track, and I wasn't fluid enough to stop and say, that's a really good idea, here, have a potato chip. But she looked at me, she looked at that, and then she did something that I will never forget, which she said, I think I will just release that desire. And then turned and walked away. And I've remembered that ever since. It was just sort of like an act of vow. That's the practice I aspire to. And I aspire to it for you too, because that was transformation right there. That was a kind of enlightenment, because all of a sudden I saw something that I forgotten a million times, but still come back to. All right, so now, what was the last part here? So I thought to myself, well, since I don't want to give up a bunch of stuff, it would be good for me to give up. And I think that's true for many, if not all of you. I thought to myself, well, what am I going to say then when, you know, there's this thing, it's like, well, what if I can't give that up? You know, what if I can't get, what if I'm just too lazy? What if I'm, you know, all of those things? What if I can't do it? Well, really, there's no answer to that other than change your mind. Just decide that you can do it. Choose to do it. The other thing that I wanted to tack on to this practice piece was this turning and being turned by the Dharma. So the nice thing about this training program is the more we give up, which is a way of us turning the Dharma wheel, the more our practice strengthens, and then the more the Dharma wheel turns us, because then it becomes easier. And I didn't want to leave this topic without saying there's a crucial element here, because for me, and I'm sure for others as well, there's a motivation. It's like, well, how do I get up for this? This is hard, right? I get discouraged, I'm tired, everybody around me looks like they're having a better time. Is this really what I want to be doing with my life? And the thing that I think is most potent here is to remember, as our Dakota grandmother who has spoken to us in retreats has said, we are all connected. When I think I don't matter, I'm forgetting that I can matter in a good way or a bad way, because I'm connected. Everything we do, every small thing we do has an impact. And this is kind of a big deal, because don't we all worry about mattering? Don't we all want to make a difference? It's kind of like, no worries, we are. So far, this is what we got to, right? This world that we have in wonderful connection is where we are. The Buddha, at the very end of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, says something that I just love. I just totally love it. It bails me out when I start getting really stubborn. Whoever cultivates these four applications of present moment awareness for 7 years can expect one or two results: penetrative insight right here and now, or, if there is a remnant of the grasping tendency, just a remnant, the state of a non-returner, meaning one more lifetime and you're there. Then he says, let alone 7 years, whoever cultivates these four applications of present moment awareness for 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, or even 1 year can expect one of these two results. Let alone 1 year, whoever cultivates these four applications of present moment awareness for 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 months, 1 month, or even half a month, can expect one of these two results. Let alone half a month. Whoever cultivates these four applications of present moment awareness for seven days can expect one of these two results: penetrative insight right here and now, or, if there is a remnant of the grasping tendency, the state of a non-returner. The basis for my assertion, very interesting, we want to hear about this. The basis for my assertion of the direct path for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sadness and distress, for the cessation of unease and depression, for finding the way, and for the direct realization of unbinding is this: the application of present moment awareness in the four areas. That's the brutally simple truth. Making good use, being right here, doing our best in this moment. It is 10:26, so regretfully, we're out of time, right?